This is BBC Radio 4. Now, Professor Kathy Willis, Director of Science at the Royal Botanic Gardens, Kew, continues to explore our changing relationship with plants over the past 250 years in Plants From Roots to Riches.
In the spring of 1900, three papers by three botanists unknown to each other appeared in the same volume of the Proceedings of the German Botanical Society. The first by Hugo de Vries, the second by Karl Korenz, and the third by Erich von Schirmack. Each had independently rediscovered the rules of inheritance that Gregor Mendel, a once obscure monk, had found 40 years earlier in his solitary investigations of pea plants. Mendel's original paper in 1866 may not have attracted much attention, but these did. Today they're credited not only with rescuing Mendel from oblivion, but also with launching the science that would soon come to be called genetics. The century of the gene had begun. Like many iconic figures, the Mendel we know is part man, part myth. Wisdom has it that he was a simple, uneducated Austrian monk, obscure in his lifetime, who, while playing around with simple pea plants, accidentally discovered the basic laws of modern genetics. And his breakthrough was ignored because he was cut off from the scientific world of his day. That's the myth, but little of this is true. Here's historian Jim Endersby to straighten the Mendel record.
Strictly speaking, Mendel wasn't Austrian. He was German, German-speaking Moravian. He wasn't actually, strictly speaking, a monk. He was an Augustinian, so he's a friar. He was not a simple, uneducated man. He had a degree from the University of Vienna and was trained by some of the leading scientists of his day in advanced mathematics and experimental design. So he actually had a really good grasp on state-of-the-art science. And we can see from reading his papers that his experiments were very carefully designed and that he grew so many plants in order to make sure he had statistically valid, accurate results to talk to. But the bigger problem is that Mendel wasn't looking for the laws of genetics. He comes out of a tradition of German plant breeding of people like Gärtner and Kohlreuter and so on. And what they're interested in is hybridizing to improve the varieties of plants. And the great problem when you hybridize is reversion. You cross two varieties, each of which has a quality that is attractive or interesting to you as a grower, and you get a nice cross. And then, unfortunately, when you plant the seeds of that cross in the next generation, the old unimproved variety starts popping up in among the good ones. And so your valuable crop is mixed up with the old sort that you were trying to improve. And it's that problem of why hybrids revert to the ancestral types. That's what Mendel is really attacking.
His experiments are well known today. He observed a variety of traits of pea plants, including height, smoothness of seed and colour. He then cross-pollinated individuals and kept careful records of which characteristics were passed on. For example, taking colour, he crossed plants which produced yellow peas with those producing green. He then replicated the experiment a vast number of times to eliminate mere chance effect. But when his first generation of hybrids flowered and bore fruit, the results stunned him.
Every single pea is yellow. The green has just disappeared. Where's it gone? And now he then gathers these yellow peas from this first generation, plants those, waits for them to grow, and then opens their pods and looks again. The green is back, but not in every plant. There's a predictable ratio about this. As he counts these thousands of plants, 10,000 plants he mentions in one of his experiments, it turns out that there are three times as many yellow peas as green peas. And this is a predictable ratio with every single trait that he experiments with, 3 to 1 every time.
Mendel concluded that there must be three types of pea, pure breeding yellow, pure breeding green, and a mixture, the scourge of the hybridist, which, although its peas came out yellow, could still produce green peas in the next generation. It looked on the face of it as if Mendel's experiments may have shown what plant breeders had known for decades, that behind all the maths, most hybrids return to their parental form. But Mendel had gone into the problem systematically. Thanks to him, science now had mathematical laws governing hybridization. Not only that, but by 1900, the scientific understanding of cells and chromosomes was now giving Mendel's ideas a physical reality. As historian Greg Raddick explains, biology had changed in ways that made Mendel's paper come to life.
The topic of heredity and related to that variation had emerged not just as a vital scientific subject in its own right, but as something which could be investigated experimentally. And that's where hybridization came in. Hybridization emerged to a number of observers as an especially perspicuous way of uncovering the laws that govern heredity, that govern the rendering of offspring as like their parents. And it was above all Charles Darwin and his work on evolution which had magnetized attention along those lines. And there is a hunger among biologists for some kind of mastering theory which will help them make sense, they hope, of the great range of new results, experimental results, statistical results, to do with heredity and to do with variation.
For the esteemed biologist William Bateson, Mendel's work provided exactly what was needed to close an ongoing debate about heredity and the environment. Bateson believed that changes in traits occurred by sudden leaps within one generation, so-called discontinuous variation, rather than gradual changes as proposed by Darwin. Mendel's emphasis on cleanly distinct either-or characters, green or yellow, round or wrinkled, was a good match for Bateson's ideas. The story goes that Bateson read Mendel's paper on a train on the way to give a lecture at the Royal Horticultural Society. He immediately rewrote his lecture there and then so he could publicly hail Mendel's work and achievement. Life might still be a game of chance, but the rules of the game were now an exact science. Bateson became one of Mendel's most effective champions. His audiences were spellbound. Plant breeders, too, were quick to spot the potential of this new science. If preserving the best characteristics of a crop from one generation to another was now science, not luck, then Mendelism could be a powerful tool in maximising output and profit. Whilst Bateson spread the word, the first professor in agricultural botany at Cambridge, Roland Biffen, put it into practice.
Bateson was telling his audience about Biffen's successes in uncovering Mendelian characters in wheat, so characters which, like the seed shapes that Mendel had investigated, where he'd found roundedness and wrinkledness and how these changed over time with some characters being dominant and others being recessive. According to Bateson, Biffen was uncovering exactly these kinds of characters in wheat. And what that meant, Bateson said, was that in a short time, breeders would be like chemists in the power that they would wield over their materials. That in just the way that chemists were able to plug elements in and out of compounds at will because they understood the atomic nature of chemistry, so breeders, understanding the atomic nature of inheritance, and that was an analogy that he prized, would be able to plug characters, hereditary characters, in and out of hybrid organisms. And this wouldn't take forever, as it did in the bad olden days, said Bateson. It was something that could be done almost instantaneously thanks to Mendelian thinking.
From 1900 to 1925, under the watchful eye of Roland Biffen, a string of new wheat varieties were rapidly produced. Biffen was partly driven by a belief that Mendelians such as himself and farmers could work together to turn around Britain's depressed wheat industry. The aim was to fight back against the so-called grain invasion from America and Canada, cheap wheat that was flooding the UK market, if they had access to new, stronger hybrids. He'd studied patterns of disease resistance in wheat and noticed how closely the distribution of disease and resistance to it followed the classic pattern of Mendelian inheritance. He was convinced that he could now replicate this in transferring strength from American to British wheat. Biffen assembled his collection of the crop from around the world, ready to start his hybridization experiments. Mark Nesbitt, you're curator of the Economic Botany Collection here at Kew, and we're here in the herbarium, and you've laid out in front of us here some examples of Biffen's success.
So we see here one of his best-known wheats, Yeoman, developed in 1916. This is the result of deliberate hybridization of wheats, which had already been practiced by plant breeders since the mid-19th century. But plant breeders had real difficulty in understanding or handling the offspring that came from those crosses. They ended up with fields of very diverse wheats, very hard to interpret, hard to use in breeding. Roland Biffin, because of his knowledge of Mendelian genetics, was able to measure the offspring of his crosses and then interpret the results in terms of the underlying genetics. This made his breeding much faster and much more predictable. So Yeoman Wheat, which had in fact Red Fife, one of his early farmer selections, as one of its parents, was a great success, and it really was one of the major wheats in production for the next 50 years or so.
No more would farmers look on their field and with disgust see plants which they just didn't want, those old ancestral varieties coming back again. These were called rogues. With Mendelian principles, you could wipe them away almost instantaneously. That was the promise, and Biffin claimed to have done it. The problem was that many of his new Mendelian varieties actually turned out to be plagued with rogues. So how do you explain that? Well, if you're Biffin, and if you're Bateson, you have a very good explanation, and one which doesn't at all threaten Mendelian principles. What you claim is that there's been contamination. If not for contamination, the field would be rogue-free. And once that's around as an explanation that liberates the theory from having to defend itself, then Mendelism ceases to be vulnerable in any way. Ceases to seem like something which might actually be false. It just becomes a taken-for-granted truth.
Hybridization continues to be a powerful tool for gardeners and industrialists alike. It can help with all sorts of problems: tolerance in salinity, resistance to disease, controlling flowering times, and fruit tree cropping. Richard Barley is Director of Horticulture here at Kew.
There was some very interesting rose breeding work, for example, carried out in Australia by a chap called Alistair Clark, who specifically wanted to breed a suite of roses that could withstand the hot, dry summers in Australia. And so he selected things like Gigantea as a very robust rose and bred that across with other roses and produced 20 or 30 of these magnificent rose forms. He named them each after wives of friends, so they have names like Marjorie Palmer and things like that. And they're still around in Australia today. I remember we, at our house in Australia, had one of his forms which was growing next to our mailbox, and it was a Gigantea hybrid, so it grew like a triffid and had the most ferocious thorns, so the poor mailman, every time he came near the mailbox, used to get tangled in it. So it's maybe not the kindest thing to plant there. But that's the essence of it. It's selection of characteristics and then deliberately crossing things and protecting the pollination thereafter so that you don't get unwanted cross-pollination. So you know you've got what you designed.
Designing, controlling and manipulating of plant traits was to become a science in its own right. Through the work of Bateson and others, botany had become botanical science. Going forwards, this was the century of the gene. Botanists would start to peer into the internal workings of plants, their cells and chromosomes. Manipulation of plant shape and form to improve crops, wealth and human well-being was the scientific aim. And as we'll hear, an endeavour laden with possibilities, but also controversies.
Professor Cathy Willis. The series is produced by Adrian Washbourne.